It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This year, the Pittsburgh Opera will celebrate its 75th season. In honor of the anniversary, this year's lineup was specially planned to display the vast talent and resources the opera has to offer. WESA senior news editor Mark Neutbar sat down with Christopher Hahn, general director of the Pittsburgh Opera, for a preview of the upcoming season.
Looking at the works to be performed in your 75th anniversary season, anyone with even a passing knowledge of opera knows that this is going to be a blockbuster lineup. Give us a quick rundown of some of the major works that you're going to be performing.
Well, right. It was fun putting this season together because a 75th anniversary season is quite something. And we're one of the oldest opera companies in the country, actually. I'm very proud of it. And so when you try to celebrate something like that, you're wanting to hold up and honor the past and some fantastic productions that we've done with the great composers. But we also very specifically wanted to look forward to the great future that our art form, we firmly believe, holds and the wonderful stuff that's going on right now. Also, the other thing that we wanted to do was start off with a massive bang. And, of course, the grandest and the biggest and the best of all grand opera is Aida. So I just could not do Aida. It's been a while since we did it last time. I've got a fantastic cast, a wonderful production, and it just seemed right that we should, you know, open with such a bang. So that was a no-brainer. And, of course, it's by the great Verdi, and this is the 200th year of his birth celebration, so this is an additional celebration of Verdi's birthday. And I also wanted to sort of touch on the three great composers, Verdi, Mozart, and Puccini. There are other great composers, but we couldn't squeeze them all into the season. And so I managed to get representatives of each of them. So we're also, of course, doing the Magic Flute, which is everybody's favorite, one of Mozart's greatest pieces, in a fabulous new production from Canada. And then our own Bohème, once again, with a really, really strong, stellar cast. Rounding off the season, we've got the quite unusual, taking the very unusual step of producing an opera by Philip Glass. And then right in the middle, we've cunningly positioned, as our resident artist show in Kappa, a really, really fascinating new piece, it's just a couple of years old, by Nico Muli called Dark Sisters, which is based around the sort of offshoot of a Mormon sect in Utah and sister wives and all that gloomy, interesting, fascinating stuff. So therefore, really, we have three great big traditional pieces and two contemporary pieces. And then yet to be announced is yet a sixth project, which will take place in our wonderful space in the Strip, which we're calling our second stage project. And that will be really a contemporary, a sort of cutting edge, and an opportunity to reach out to a new audience.
Let's go back right to the top. You were talking about Aida, and you called it a no-brainer to start with that one. But is it going to be as big and as, you know, full of pageantry as we have come to expect from that production?
Yeah, I should say I have no brains to do it because it is a massive challenge for an opera company to do it. Even the Met thinks twice about doing it. Yes, it is. I mean, it requires a very large chorus, a very large number of supernumeraries or actors who are silent, as well as, of course, it's quite an extensive cast. The production, which we actually co-own with another opera company, is the one that was here before, but is majestic, is the best way to describe it. Enormous columns. It is ancient Egypt. And the orchestra is, you know, just great size. So, and we are planning to have animals this time because everybody seems very determined that we have animals and they get to be carefully picked so that nobody's concerned about them.
That's a move on from Aida, then. You do go to a lighter mood with Mozart's Magic Flute. Interesting twist here is that you're using it as sort of a homecoming. Would you help explain that for me?
Yeah. Really central to what we have been doing at Pittsburgh Opera is to develop our resident artist program as strongly as possible. And so this program has been going on for quite some time, and we have a number of extraordinarily successful alums. I didn't really sort of set out to do this, but then it happened, and I thought, oh, this is perfect for a 75th anniversary season. All of the roles in the Magic Flute, bar one, are being taken by alums of the program, and one or two current members, because the Magic Flute is ideal for that. It requires a sort of youthful promise and sweet younger voices. It became a celebration of the core of the company, which is this resident artist program, as well as being a bit of a challenge because increasingly we're looking for ways to attract new audiences. We always have done. And so we are presenting this in English. And Mozart, when he wrote it, he wanted it to be performed in the language of his audience. But people have been squeamish about singing the music in English because they always want to, you know, keep exactly the same vowel sounds and all that good stuff, which I totally agree with. But particularly Mozart's intention to bring it immediately to the audience has given us a lot of us sort of pause. And so I'm going to experiment with doing this the whole of the show. Both there's a wonderful translation that mimics the vowel sounds very well, as well as the dialogue. And consequently, I mean, many people feel that the Magic Flute is an ideal show to introduce a younger audience to.
Yeah, you know, opera does have this reputation of appealing to an older demographic. Where do you see the potential for finding new opera patrons?
Well, I need to challenge that just a little bit because it is an assumption. And in fact, you actually go to a performance and you look around and you look a little further back.
Okay.
You see an awful lot of young people. There is a great mix in our audience about which I'm very glad, but I'm never complacent about because we have to keep on searching of ways to interact. What I have found, certainly recently, is that in the younger demographic, there is a total openness to experiencing this.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Mark Neupbaur speaking to Pittsburgh Opera General Director Christopher Hahn. Now, I want to get back to some of those other marquee works for your 75th anniversary season. But first, I don't want to overlook the resident and artist program that you brought up. You keep them really busy. What are you doing to feature their talents in this season?
Well, we do keep them very busy. And that is because my philosophy for training younger opera singers is to provide as much experience on stage or performing as possible. So there is often a sort of a misconception that these singers are students. Some people do say, oh, those are your students, right? Well, in the sense that we're all students, yes. But they're not professional. They're all professionals. They've all been performing around the country. By the time they have gone through the very rigorous audition process to come to our program, they've had to have quite a lot under their belt already. But the life of any performing artist, there's a period of learning and apprenticeship and growing and continuing your studies, but also interacting with more seasoned professionals. On top of the stage work, we have a very extensive outreach program, numbers of projects. We do Brown Bag Opera, which is free to the public on a Saturday in our building. We do art song recitals. We do a lot of singing in the community. And then all of that comes together at the end of the year with a sort of a little graduation moment. Then they go off to their summer activities and they come back for a second year because it's usually a two-year program.
Tell me a little bit more about those Brown Bag concerts. It seems like a great way for someone who's curious about opera to get a good taste of it but not have to, you know, spend as much money and not have to make as much of a commitment to it.
Yes, it really is. And that's how they designed, because Brown Bag is because you bring your lunch. It's very casual. It breaks down all the stereotypes. We set it up so that you can, you know, bring your lunch and sit around tables and eat, or you can sit in chairs. And there are various focuses for it. It depends on the time of year. I mean, this time of year, it might be a focus on sort of a lot of Irish music, Valentine's Day, the opera that's coming up. We may be doing a Mozart opera, in which case it will be Mozart. It's just a very easy approach. There's a nice little reception afterwards. You meet the performers, and they've all got a great following. So there are people who come religiously once a month during the season on a Saturday to sample what we can provide for them.
Excellent. Now, turning back to your lineup of major works, not everything in your schedule is a tried-and-true classic. Tell me a little bit about the work from Philip Glass that you'll be featuring.
Right. Well, Philip Glass burst on the scene decades ago. By the way, I should point out that he's got this wonderful Pittsburgh connection because he taught music, high school music, in Pittsburgh for a couple of years.
It all comes back through here, doesn't it?
It always does. And he's got a special place in his heart for Pittsburgh. So his small ensemble has actually traveled through here for years in the past. And then since then, of course, he's been so tremendously successful in his collaborations in the film industry, so that you just maybe don't even know it, but virtually, I mean, many of the great movies that, you know, we've been seeing over the last decades have had Philip Glass scores. So his musical language, which had seemed so extreme early on, now is really part of the fabric of what we expect of musical language. So I thought it was time for us to celebrate it. This particular opera is fascinating because it is based on Jean Cocteau's version of Orpheus, so it's got that film noir, dreamlike, surrealist gloss of Jean Cocteau. The piece plays a lot with reality and perception and mirrors. Each of the performers has a double, an image following or encountering this person. So it is so skillfully done that you actually begin to lose track of who is who and who's the singer and who's the double. And it's so intriguing, and the musical language is so mysteriously supportive of this idea. And let's face it, Orpheus was really the kind of the god of music. So I thought, what better a way to end a season to celebrate music than with the myth of Orpheus.
Sounds like a fascinating piece, an amazing 75th anniversary series that you have coming up, season, I should say. As you look forward to it, what is the most exciting, most amazing thing as you approach it?
For me, it's really the variety. I'm always seeking for a variety for an audience so that, you know, someone who's got a bent for things that are new and interesting are going to be satisfied by this. And somebody who just loves the tried and true are going to be satisfied by this as well. What I'm always trying to do is offer an audience the possibility to expand and to stretch and to grow. And I think that that's what this is all about. And that's actually the part that excites me most. It's a more organic, long-term process than a sort of a one event because, you know, events come and go, but it's the collective consciousness and understanding of how this affects the individual, but also the individual in the community, because this is really a communal activity. And it's creating those moments that people will remember for the rest of their lives.
Well, thank you for creating those moments for Pittsburgh, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that was 90.5 WESA Senior News Editor Mark Neutbar speaking with Christopher Hahn, General Director of the Pittsburgh Opera. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again Monday with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.